For October the 23rd, 2015, we talk about the Portland Retro Gaming Expo, the Canesville Files, and we ask you about your favorite and least favorite puzzles in non-puzzle games. Welcome to Level 125. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm Jella Prendes.
And I'm Ben Merkel.
And you're listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. Sorry if I am in a kind of a croaky voice. I'm going to talk about that during the brief because I've got some cool stuff that's been happening this past week. But yeah, how's everybody doing? Do we have any anecdotes over the past week or so?
Go ahead.
I just wanted to give a shout out to listener Michael Farmer, who sent me some cool postcards and other goodies like illustrations and stuff that he picked up at Dragon Con. They really brightened my day. He basically just sent me a bunch of postcards slowly but surely over like a week and then sent me like a little box with some stuff in it. So that was really neato. So thanks so much, Farmer. That was cool. And thanks to all the other listeners, too, for saying hi and hand apps and stuff like that. It's always nice to hear.
Nice. Yeah, I always forget what time of the year Dragon Con is.
Well, that was actually like a little bit back, but I didn't get the chance to say something like on the last episode I was on. So
Okay. I gotcha. Yeah. Well, it looks like there are all kinds of these little meetups happening, it feels like.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, that's pretty cool. Anybody else?
I'm just hunkering down for my first ever time traveling with a baby, which is going to be interesting.
Time travel with babies. Yeah.
So is Luke at a young enough age and small enough size where he has to ride on Jen's lap?
Yes. So the good news is he flies free. Bad news is he's going to be on our laps for 5 hours, which is, I don't know if it's going to make him or us more annoyed. We will find out.
Yeah, that's it's like having a fanny pack that fights you.
So my theory for babies crying on planes is that they don't know how to pop their ears and that like they get the terrible amount of pressure.
Yeah, mm-hmm. We're packing dum-dums to help with that.
Okay. Yeah. I got you.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah. Now, I always feel bad because like I get annoyed when I hear babies cry, but not because I blame the baby or the parents, but because that is inherently one of the most distressing sounds.
It is like evolutionarily the like most distressing sound.
And also
millions of years have gone into making that the most distressing sound.
Right. And also, if I'm being honest with myself, that's exactly the noise I want to make. So not because I'm scared of flying, but because, you know, it's an incredibly uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, well. Well, yeah, you'll have to let us know how that goes.
Mm-hmm. So I'll be bringing my Vita. Who knows if I'll actually get to use it?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, probably not.
Baby's first bank in Rampa, huh?
That's right. That's a quick title.
last week's title was a callback, so we can't, one of the previous titles was a callback, so we can't do it so soon. Oh.
We'll have to do a call forward instead.
we have to establish something here and then in a year and a half do it again.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, cool. We've got what's probably going to be a quick show because of life stuff here, but we're going to hit all three of the regular segments here, the brief, the multiplayer, and the grind, starting with
the brief,
where we talk about things that are happening around us in the world of video games. Do you all mind if I give a quick recounting of the Portland Retro Gaming Expo?
Regale us.
Yeah. So this is a really fun time, and it's something I look forward to every year. People who listen to the shows and listen to the network know that we do. We have a booth presence there for Watch Out for Fireballs. We've done live shows for the past several years. It is like my yearly vacation, if a vacation is a place where you go to be around a bunch of people and also work, but
and also karaoke.
Yes, we had our small karaoke gathering on Friday. Got so drunk that I walked in on Saturday morning at 9 o'clock, just not top 10 hungover, but pretty hungover. and then pretty much from 9 a.m. Saturday to let's say 8 p.m. Sunday, it was just straight up socializing and talking with fans and having people come up to us and ask questions about the show and tell us how much they like the shows, which is really nice. And I don't want to be like, haha, people like us, but it is like this weird indicator of growth. Just how many more people are returning and coming up and saying these things than it was before. And it's always wonderful to have people say that you make them happy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But
you guys all make me happy.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we don't say it enough, but it's true. Yeah.
Well, and then too, I got a lot of messages from people who were like, oh man, I wish I was at PRG. And I'm like, me too, dude, I'm not there. we're all checking your updates. So yeah, it's really awesome when you guys keep us informed.
Yeah, we were trying to, you know, and I was tweeting what I could and everything.
Yeah,
and
you were drunk tweeting from the karaoke. It was awesome.
Yeah, it was great. I was tweeting pictures. I almost did a Periscope, but I don't know what Periscope is. but yeah, like the show gets bigger and bigger every year, and I can't encourage people enough. You know, I understand if you're not in a place, you know, where it's possible to come out, but like, man, just like as this gets bigger, you know, we don't have any intention to really stop. Like, I can't encourage you enough to come out.
Yeah, and like if there's enough listeners who are flying in, maybe that could be like, hey, everybody buddy up and stuff, you know, like maybe you can go in and, you know, get plan hotel rooms and stuff together with some of the people that, you know, the listeners chat among themselves, that kind of a thing.
And now that we have the Slack as like a centralized place to do that, too, that's also something we can kind of help facilitate. But yeah, I don't know. That's really all that there is. I can't speak too much to like the gaming news content of what was there. Like, it's just a whole bunch of places selling retro games. I chickened out on buying a $170 copy of Rule of Rose, and instead I bought a fan translation card of Mother 3. So I can play that on my Game Boy Advance P in my bed. And I also got a copy of Breath of Fire Dragon Quarter. So those were my acquisitions, along with a super thoughtful gift from Riff from the Video Games Hot Dog podcast. He brought me this set of playing cards that he made that match the collectible cards from Deadly Premonition.
Awesome. Nice.
Yeah.
So that's kind of like, yeah, that's the bomb.
Yeah.
That's one of those things. It's just like, you know, put that on the broad market, you'd make a killing.
It's like it's one of six of a kind.
Yeah, that's like, and that's really, really cool.
Yeah, he was just he moved recently. I found it. I was like, you know who'd really like this? And like, he was totally right. It really made my weekend, along with a bunch of other stuff that made my weekend. But it was a very thoughtful gift, and I'm thankful for it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so thank you everybody who came out. If you are a new listener because you picked up some of our literature, then welcome. I hope you enjoy the show. But otherwise,
that was silly. This is the wrong one. You're bad at podcasts. How'd you do that?
What?
This isn't Watch Out for Fireballs.
It's grown into a network presence because we have Brayton and Nick there. You know, like we're,
oh yeah, okay.
Yeah, we're not just handing out WAF stuff. We're handing out stuff for the entire network.
Cool.
Yeah. So that's really all I have. I just wanted to say thanks to everybody and encourage everybody, like, start planning now for like next year's one, because if you have the ability, we would love to see you.
Yay!
Good stuff.
Yeah, who wants to go next?
I'll do mine as a quick hit.
Okay.
Just that the Valkyria Chronicles has gotten a trademark filed for a new game. So it is titled Valkyria of the Blue Revolution,
okay,
which piques my interest. So not following the previous, you know, 1, 2, 3 convention that we've seen before. But there's a similar name in for the Gap Games Japanese title, which is Valkyria of the Battlefield.
Okay.
Which I'm always intrigued by how, you know, how that gets changed, if this is indeed the same game. If it's different, then makes sense. But if this is indeed the same game, what thinking goes behind this one should be Valkyria of the Battlefield and this one should be Valkyria of the Blue Revolution.
My favorite version of that actually is a Virtue Slash Reward when it came out in Japan. Its subtitle roughly translated to Good People Die. But yeah, I don't
understand that one changing.
I don't know why that would be in this case. Like Blue Revolution, that makes it sound a little bit like a Cold War thing, because it wasn't Valkyria mm-hmm. Chronicles the kind of anime strategy RPG version of World War II or retelling?
Yeah, very much so.
Huh.
Had that vibe with
is America
abstract.
Blue in the Cold War?
I have no idea. I just know blue and red are sometimes in opposition to each other.
I was going to say, we sure as hell weren't red.
Huh. Well, yeah, I'm curious about that. I know that they had some big success when they released Valkyria Chronicles on Steam.
Mm-hmm. And that was just recently.
Yeah. And there's another, like, there was a headline thing for a Tales game on Steam as well here recently. So I guess that is one of the hot new places for JRPGs.
Huh.
Yeah.
Yeah, go figure. Steam just is getting more and more ubiquitous, and I think it's a good thing.
Yeah, yep. I like it. I like it, and I also like that there's stuff like Jodge out there, too. It's, you know, yep. It is a good time to own a PC.
Yep.
Yeah.
I agree.
Jala, how about you?
Okay, well, you know that thing David was worried about regarding the Call of Duty Twitter campaign, tweeting stuff from the game as if it was real news?
That people would War of the Worlds it?
Yeah, like, so that's kind of like real news is actually, in fact, taking footage of video games and trying to use that in news stories to show stuff. It doesn't make any sense. An Egyptian news agency used footage from the Russian-made game Apache Air Assault to show Russian dominance against ISIS in Syria. Now, I watched it because there is a YouTube video of like that broadcast that's in the article, and I'm sitting here watching it, and it's just like very obviously a video game, and they're speaking English in the game. So I'm just like, what? How does this? I don't even get it. Like, how does this even fly to be on TV? Like, what the hell? And then for people to just like believe it, just eat it up. Like, what? And so anyway, that just threw me for a loop. But because, you know, there was already that mention of the Call of Duty Twitter campaign, and then this thing popped up, and I'm just like, okay, it's nothing more to it than that. I'm just like, what the fuck? Seriously, the fuck?
You know, news sites do use those crappy animatics from time to time.
Oh, those Korean ones?
Just like, you know, generic animatic of a helicopter. Generic animatic of, and it's like, you know, clearly animated, but it illustrates a point. Mm-hmm. So,
But this was like lifting it right out of the game, like from some part of the game where they're doing, you know, like an air raid or something. And I'm just like, what? No, just no. What? I don't even know. It was confusing. So that just threw me for enough of a loop, and it called back to something else that was mentioned previously. That's all. Nothing exciting.
That reminds me, around the time that Fallout 3 was coming out, I forget who it was, but some politician, either here or abroad, that really narrows it down. Some politician somewhere took the image of, I think it was the Capitol building, like, you know, blasted and dilapidated, either that or the White House, and used it as like, if you don't vote our way, what could happen?
Oh, God.
Like that. Like, huh. Well, that's kind of shitty.
You will become a super mutant.
And you'll regenerate in radiation, which is good because there's going to be a lot of it.
Actually, this is sounding pretty cool.
It's a real tug of war of emotions there. Yeah.
Let's all be ghouls. If you're lucky, you won't need a flashlight. The glowing ones?
Vote 10 penny. Yeah.
Huh. Well, that is super goofy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ben, how about you?
So the story I got is they released a trailer for the game Adrift, and I think they previously had a trailer for it because I believe I saw one like a year ago or so at the Video Game Awards in Vegas.
Okay.
But they released a 9-minute gameplay trailer of it, and it basically looks like Gravity the game. And since I loved Gravity, I'm kind of excited about the game. You're basically floating around a broken up space station trying to get it somewhat operational so that you can get back to Earth okay. And so, yeah, it's straight up the premises of Gravity. But they admit there are similarities in the idea, but they started developing it before the movie came out. So they feel confident that the narrative is distinct enough that it's not the same thing, but we'll see.
Yeah. I can't.
How do you think that meeting went when Gravity was announced? You know, first day after with the team developing Adrift.
I don't know. I imagine the first day after they saw the movie Gravity, they were probably like, "Yeah, that movie was cool."
Yeah, that Deep Impact Armageddon effect is very strange.
What do you mean? Oh, yeah.
Well, yeah, this was good. I've not heard of this developer before. Do we know?
It's developed by somebody who worked for Microsoft, and I believe they quit and moved from Seattle to Southern Los Angeles and then made this game.
Yeah. It's just it's not a studio that I've seen before. 310.
Mm-hmm. I believe this is their first game, I think.
Oh.
What the people who made Gone Home are making a game called, is it Tacoma? Is that right?
Yes. Yeah.
That is also on a space station?
Mm-hmm.
Albeit not quite so obliterated of a space station, at least in what they've shown.
Yeah, it's at least intact enough that you can see how the people who lived there lived.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, if I remember the original trailer for Adrift that was... came at the what are the video game awards called?
The Spike VGAs. I guess they're not the Spike anymore, but
yeah, I think they're the just called the Game Awards now. Oh, okay. I think they changed the it awards, from the VGAs. Yeah.
But I think that's where they debuted Adrift, right?
Perhaps. I cannot remember.
Yeah. I think so. From what I've seen, like there is not much spaceship left in that game.
Well, I mean, if they make it like an Apollo 13 thing. Yeah.
Oh, that could be really interesting.
I don't know. This looks really cool. I had not heard about it before.
Mm-hmm.
Neat.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer section where we interact with you, the listeners. Jala, my understanding is you came up with this week's question, so why don't you share it with the listeners?
Okay, well, I'm going to read it the way Dennis wrote it because he posted it. It's a co-op thing. All right, so similar to stealth sections, many games feel the need to throw in puzzle sections to break up the action, often with mixed results. What are the best and worst puzzles from otherwise non-puzzle-centric games?
Nice. So I'm going to lead in with Amanda, who writes in saying, Vagrant Story's block puzzles make it nigh unplayable and ruin an otherwise interesting game.
Agree.
Yeah, that's one I need to play.
Really? You haven't played that?
I'm serious. Okay. I haven't played Vagrant Story, which is crazy because I love the Eva Lisa Lyons games from the, you know, anything that takes place in that world from Square. And I really enjoy the art style of that. See, here's the thing. Whenever a JRPG comes up, it's immediately, hey, you guys have to do that for WoW. So, like,
oh, no.
I'm afraid if somebody sees me playing that on PSN, they're going to get false ideas about our upcoming schedule.
Yeah.
Yeah. At least that's what I'm going to blame it on.
But you can't limit it that way.
I like the idea that someone has friended you just because they want to see what you're playing for future episodes.
So they can kind of like stalk you about
it. People probably already saw the result of the stealth poll for Watch Out for Fireballs when I was testing it out today. So
what's the result?
Thief Deadly Shadows.
Yay!
Ooh, yeah. Nice. Just narrowly beating out Blood Curse, and I'm gonna have to play Blood Curse anyway because I really wanted to play that game. That was the one I was pulling for.
Aww.
So, yeah. Oh well. Ben, what does Tanner say?
Tanner says, "Silent Hill's piano puzzle in the elementary school nearly broke me." I honestly can't remember this puzzle off the top of my head.
You know what's funny is that I just out of curiosity, I wanted to compare, and I Googled what the top 10 hardest puzzles in games are, and that one came up as one of the top 10, and then even in one of the top 5. So
Huh. I want to say it involved some kind of poem about crows, and you had to extrapolate that to the keys on a piano to get the right sequence of notes. But the interesting thing about Silent Hill is they have a puzzle difficulty, right?
Not that early. Silent Hill 1 did not. However, 2 and 3 did.
Oh, okay. I thought Silent Hill 1 did.
What was this puzzle called? Do you remember?
Okay, so the idea is you're trying to get this medallion, and there's a puzzle. There's a puzzle to get it. There's a piano that is the input method to release this medallion. And instead of having sheet music, you have this poem that roughly coincides to the positioning of different keys, what their nearest neighbors are, and the relationship between white and black keys. And there's a red herring that has to do with the fact that some keys have blood on them, whereas other ones that look like they have a bloody fingerprint on them don't actually have a correlation. Mm-hmm. So it becomes like you're trying to parse this poem, and it's a little bit of a logic thing. Like, okay, Jim is taller than Tammy, but shorter than Steve. Steve, it's a little bit like that, to where it ultimately
what
comes out.
What did Steve eat for breakfast?
Yeah, exactly.
This is only for the medallion, like on the second playthrough?
No, that you're thinking of Silent Hill 2. This is like Silent Hill 1, where you're in the school trying to get into the clock tower.
No, there's a second playthrough on Silent Hill 1, though, where you get the alien ending.
That's actually, you just go to the I'm getting super arcane with this. you just have to find the key inside of the doghouse, I think.
I thought there were more pieces you had to pick up to get the alien ending like throughout the first part of the game, but I might be misremembering that.
Hey, okay. I'm not sure. I know that...
Somewhere there's a listener screaming at their steering wheel.
there is more. You have to use a channeling stone in certain places in the world.
Yeah, that's right. Okay. Yeah.
Yep. But there we go. I knew it had something to do with the doghouse. Huh. But yeah, that is indeed a pretty a pretty weird puzzle. Not as weird as I'll save that for mine, actually. Let's go with Dennis, here's the order. What does Roop say?
Roop says, I liked the reassembly of the Xenomorph in Dead Space 3. Getting the pieces was annoying, but the assembly itself was integrated into the game quite good. I'm not familiar with this one. I haven't gotten to Dead Space 3.
Neither am I. I've just played Dead Space 2.
I actually stopped at 2 as well, so I am
nobody
in the dark
has any
well.
Frame of reference. Oh, yeah.
We're missing a good puzzle.
Sorry, Rick.
Apparently. Sorry.
Yeah.
I just want to know if it's the same Xenomorph from Alien.
That's
I'm sure it's not, but
it's weird that they would use that same word when they so clearly kind of like crib from and riff off of that series.
Yeah.
Huh. Jala, what does Franz say?
Franz says, the giant blind three-tentacled puzzle boss in Half-Life is one of my favorite boss fights of all time. The plant-like design of the thing combined with the clanging of the beaks on the floor and the knowledge that a single touch can mean instant death make for a thrilling and terrifying timing-based puzzle. I've been reinstalling the game about once every year since its release just to get through that encounter again.
Yeah, when you realize that that it's blind but super sensitive with its hearing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that is one of my favorite encounters in that game.
Yay.
Agreed. And then let's see here. I'll pick up with Chase, who says, Pokemon tends to litter gyms and plot-relevant areas with puzzles, and every game had very high and very low points, with Red and Blue having the lowest, to my memory. The most infamous, thanks to Twitch Plays Pokemon, is the Sylph Cove floor tile puzzle. What's a tuzzle?
Tuzzles. Teletons.
Meat tuzzles. which sent you on the direction that the tile indicated. The teleportation pads in the Psychic Gym was also pretty brutal. I can't quite remember the Silphco puzzles, but do you guys remember those boulder pushing puzzles?
Yeah, where it was really easy to screw yourself over by pushing it into a corner that you couldn't push it anymore in.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of just like a regular Sokoban problem. So, but yes, you could screw yourself, and also the fact that you had all the Zubats and Geodudes attacking you every turn, like they just cranked up the encounter high. So like no individual element of that was really bad. Let's just say it. The the encounter rate is the worst part of that. But yeah, those two working together made an otherwise easy puzzle terrible.
Yeah, you definitely need to get the, what is it, the spray whatever to minimize the encounters.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, the Pokemon spray. Huh.
This bat shark repellent.
Let's see here. Ben, what does David say?
David says, Destiny's latest expansion has added a lot of hidden content that requires some serious puzzle-solving skills, finding hidden objects and interactions to unlock some hidden gear. Best part is it's optional, as none of the drops are required for anything, just cool, good gear. Dunce Award goes to moving block puzzles in Pokemon. Annoying, time-consuming, and random battles make it easy to lose your place.
So, like we were saying...
Whoops, I jumped the gun. I didn't read ahead. I'm sorry.
It's fine.
Ah.
Hand daps. It's cool.
Yeah, so, Ben, you're the one here who has the most experience with Destiny. Like, is that stuff cool? Are we to believe this David, if that is his real name?
I don't believe David. I played games with him.
I don't think they had a lot of puzzle stuff in the base game, or at least I didn't experience a whole lot with it. So I haven't experienced that part of it. So.
Well, according to all the stuff I've been hearing, though, all the newest stuff they've been releasing is much different.
Yeah.
Okay.
Hmm. Let's see here. Dennis, what does Steven say?
Steven says, my favorite puzzle in a non-puzzle game right now is actually from Metal Gear Solid 5. Obviously no spoilers, but it was another fun meta brain teaser the series does well involving your crew, making you scrutinize a part of their traits you may have only glanced over. At least I did.
Mm-hmm.
Are you guys like immediately familiar with what he's talking about?
I think I just got to this part this week. Yeah. So yeah.
It is cool. It is a very cool puzzle that, like, it's not quite on the level of the look at the back of the CD case kind of thing, but it does take advantage of the complexity of the interface and the amount of information it throws at you to defy your ability to find a pattern.
Very cool. As for worse, Steven continues, it was in God of War 3. I think it was 3 anyway. As Kratos, you're making your way through some sort of temple, and you have to get past a gate that's too far from the lever you pull to simply run under it. To solve this, you must find a topless female servant and carry her over to the lever. I don't remember exactly how the logistics worked, but you somehow shove her into the gears after pulling the lever, which stops the gate from closing. Mm. I've been called out for being overly sensitive about this, but even for a series that doesn't shy away from nudity and violence, this seemed a bit gratuitous to me.
Sounds like
God of War is not that great at their puzzles. Yeah, not that great at a lot of things.
Yeah, and that's something just in terms of, like, they had something in the original game, which is the only one of the series that I really played aside from like a little bit of God of War 3, around the time that it came out, which was like it presented you with this moral choice that isn't actually a choice, where there's a slave in a cage and you have to push him into the maw of this monster in order to pass, and he's begging you to stop, but you're a tough man who has to make hard choices.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's that one is probably tame, and that's the problem, right? Is that they started with the first game trying to go so over the top. And then they've just felt the need to up themselves or up the ante every time they release a new game, which it has just gotten to the point of unfortunate.
Yeah, it's almost become a parody of itself. But yeah. I will say that, like, it, you know, like, there are narrative reasons for pushing the envelope, you know, so it's not like. Almost, it's not like GTA almost, but like, they do kind of. It's a little bit gratuitous as the series goes on.
I'm not sure what you're referencing with narrative reason, but the narrative reason I got for it was like, I'm on a rampage.
Yeah.
And that's just, it stays at that level for the entire game.
To keep him as an anti-hero.
Yeah.
God of War 3 did some really weird crap around him, like trying to rescue a substitute daughter figure in the end.
Yeah, that part was weird.
It just, yeah. So, and for them to play so hard to the anti-hero thing for three games and then to randomly like wrap it back around was just, yeah, it was off.
Yeah. That's why I think like the puzzles make sense maybe like in game one and a little bit in game two, but yeah.
If we spend, you know, if we talk about everything that's wrong with God of War, we will be here all night.
Moving right along, then.
to use the word that people hate, it is problematic.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Huh. Let's see here. That was you, Dennis. So, Jala, what does Ollie say?
Ollie says, I'll always have a soft spot for Resident Evil's, quote, puzzles. They were simple, but very effective. Did I suffer frustration a few times? Sure. I did walk around the whole mansion for hours trying to figure out where to put an emblem or a ruby, but that was part of the game's charm. I can forgive it for that. I could probably forgive Resident Evil anything except the films. Ugh.
Hey now.
Whoa.
What? I totally agree with that. I do not like the films. Okay, anyway. What I can't forgive is Castlevania 2 and the ridiculous Deborah Cliff puzzle. And I played it for the first time as an adult with many years of gaming experience, not as a child. It is ridiculous.
Yep. Castlevania 2 is one of those things that I like that I cannot defend.
What is the Deborah Cliff puzzle?
There's no apparent way forward. You have to discern from some NPCs, some of which blatantly lie to you. that you have to walk there and I believe hold down until a whirlwind appears and carries you away from the cliff.
Sure.
That's like some Braid Get the Stars level shit.
Yeah.
Like,
Braid, by the way, is also on that list of the most difficult puzzles. They're like one of the optional endings.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh sure.
Yeah. Quickly, Dennis, can you defend? So I've only ever seen Apocalypse, which I think is the third one. Can you defend the Resident Evil movies?
I don't remember which one it was. I believe we've talked about this on the show. I was watching it with David on a lark, and it has just the most perfect one-liner ever. They have like the mutant dogs coming after the
Cerberus. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Oh, excuse me. Yes. Coming after the good guys and they like fight them off. And the final one, like, you know, they manage to knock down. It's like scrabbling on the floor. And the guy just puts a bullet. Bam. Stay. David and I just looked at each other and just lost it. We're like, oh.
Now, if I were drunk, maybe. But...
Yeah, that's the thing. I made the mistake.
That's like a drinking movie. Like that. That's fine.
Yeah. It was one of those things where like we were in a punchy mood anyway. We'd probably been drinking. We were, you know, halfway paying attention. It just came out of nowhere so perfectly for the moment that it's etched in my memory as a favorite moment from movies in general.
Well, yeah. You know, there are times when the movie is so bad that it just kind of wraps around being good in that terrible way. So maybe that particular moment was, you know, a shining spot of wrapping back around for you.
I don't care.
I remember nothing about any of the rest of the movie. So yeah.
I don't care how so bad it's good the room is. Like, you're not going to watch that without a friend. Like,
dude, I saw a showing of that last week, and there was Mark from the movie was at the showing. It was great. Yeah.
Huh. But yeah, you're watching that with a group of people, like watching Resident Evil Apocalypse alone when you're like in late high school. Like, it's just sad enough that you're just going to fall asleep.
Yeah.
Huh. Let's see here. I will continue on with Sam Bear, who says the best puzzle in a non-puzzle game is clearly the reset the computer screen in X-Men for Sega Genesis. It used the hardware in a way that I didn't start seeing regularly until the Nintendo DS. If you haven't played the game, at the end of the penultimate level, you have to physically reset the Genesis in order to purge a computer virus from the danger room. The worst puzzle is every first-person maze in an action game from the NES era. No one's going to argue that Fester's Quest and Golgo 13 are great games, but they could have been better.
Mm-hmm.
They could have been better.
Yeah, I'm sure somebody is going to jump out and defend the Goonies 2. I haven't played it enough to hold a soft spot for it in my heart. However, Friday the 13th managed that pretty well.
Because
the environments were pretty small and Freddy could be around any corner. So you're always kind of holding your breath.
Yeah.
Dun,
yeah.
Dun.
Agree.
Yeah. Let's see. Oh, along the way of that, like that DS thing, nobody so far has mentioned the puzzles. Like every Sing game, that's CING, the people who made Hotel Dusk, that series, and also, oh my gosh, Trace Memory. And again, every game included a puzzle where you had to close the lid of the DS to do something. To like transfer something from the top screen to the bottom screen or something like that. I think a Zelda game did it too. Yes, I understand a lot of people had trouble with those as well, because it's asking you to think literally outside of the box that the game is being played on.
And you're like, no, I can't do that thing.
It's like, yeah. Well, I close this machine all the time. Yeah. Ben, what does Sean say?
Sean says they're optional, but I found anything resembling a puzzle in the Dragon Age games to lack fun or provide motivation to complete them. Agreed.
Most puzzles in Dragon Age are just like walk and stand on the panels, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. I agree. I can't really remember too many puzzles aside from standing on panels. Dennis, what does Christopher say?
Christopher says, it barely qualifies as a puzzle, but I always loved looking out for traps. In the action RPG Risen, in the caves and crypts, there was always some kind of death trap to have to figure out how to not set off. And some of the most fun, to me, are the secret exits in Super Mario World and all the neat hidden stuff in The Binding of Isaac.
Yeah.
All good stuff. I remember I started playing Dungeons and Dragons online, and I didn't stick with it, obviously, but my character had a sense trap skill, mm-hmm. and just for the first area of the game, I hadn't realized yet that it just wasn't going to be that common, and was just walking, you know, every five steps using sense traps, just terrified of what was going to be coming out of the walls at me.
Yeah.
And it was not nearly as useful as I was hoping that it was.
You're not in the Tomb of Horrors, buddy.
Was the practical use for that to like check doors and chests, do you think?
I think that was the intended use for it. And okay. I was just like, walls I will include in that. And, but like, and also this puddle. And
all they have to do is put in one swinging blade trap for you to think that every step contains danger.
Yeah, one time and I'm scarred for life.
Yeah. Well, no, it's just like one time and anything is possible.
Well, to be fair, in the DDO beginning sequence, they even have a whole section where it's like, wait, stand back, let the thief undo this trap, blah, 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 blah. So like they set you up to thinking that there's going to be traps all over.
Yeah.
So.
Hmm. And Jala, why don't you round us out with Noah's?
Noah says, the Mr. Freeze fight from Arkham City stands out as both a great boss fight and a great puzzle. It's true to the character because, of course, this is how a scientist would fight. Challenging because if you haven't mastered the takedown mechanics yet, you're in for a hard time, and it's fun.
Yeah. No, I mean, that is one of the best boss encounters in video games, an awesome puzzle that, like, forces you to... It's like a midterm exam for the mechanics of the game, and it is a Metal Gear-ass fight in a non-Metal Gear game.
Yeah. It also, I think it does not feel out of place with the rest of the game, probably because it uses all the different mechanics so well. But I think, you know, a lot of times a puzzle boss will just feel completely out of nowhere. Mm-hmm. Whereas this one, as he points out, just kind of fits right in. You're like, of course, this is exactly how it should be.
It feels like a battle of wits. And like, you know, I mm-hmm. like a smart Batman.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Do you have any thoughts on that, Ben? Like, I know that you really enjoyed that game.
It was one of the highlights of the game because other parts of the game were not as great. So
yeah, I think the only thing that comes close is maybe Penguin.
Okay.
That's more of like a stealth thing.
Yeah,
that's more fun for like Nolan North doing a non-Nolan North voice. Yeah.
Yeah.
Huh. Well, yeah, we got through those in record time, everybody.
Yahoo!
Woo!
We are a motivated crew tonight to move quickly.
Yes, we are. I hope we didn't give anybody short shrift. Who wants to volunteer theirs first from our side? Jala, how about you? Sorry, I made a decision.
Okay, I volunteer.
I wanted to hear. Okay. I asked
you. She volunteers as tribute.
Who wants to volunteer? I wanted to volunteer, but I didn't want to volunteer myself. I volunteered you.
That's fine. I was going to volunteer anyway. So, I would say the worst one that I can think of offhand that I come across because I play this game with some level of regularity, getting to the dungeon in Legend of Zelda, the original game, where you have to go up a certain number of screens over, blah, 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 in a certain pattern to unlock the dungeon. And there's like no fucking way that you can ever solve that except for buying it through a game guide and looking it up, which is total BS. So like they don't give you any way to know how the hell to do that otherwise.
Are you talking about the Forbidden Woods or Mysterious Woods stuff? Yeah, I believe that you are. That might be the only. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, there's one particular dungeon where you have to be on a certain screen, go up like three times and over it, like whatever it is, some stupid combination. But there's like no way to know how to do that offhand. Yeah. So. All right. Yeah. And best.
Go ahead.
I was interested that nobody said Psycho Mantis from the original Metal Gear.
Solid.
So, you know, like that is a puzzle in itself because you have to figure out what to do, think outside the box to even get to really fight him. So. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I agree. Psycho Mantis is great. And they've never been able to mimic that success since.
Nope.
I'm going to go ahead with mine just because it was brought up a little bit earlier. I only have a negative example, but Silent Hill 3, the aforementioned puzzle difficulty slider. There are some puzzles that it hits and there are some that it doesn't. So any puzzle that is like a Resident Evil-ass puzzle where you have to find an item and mix it with another item in the world, those are almost all like high school chemistry puzzles. Or like high school science puzzles were like, there's something that you need to set on fire. So you have to make an oxygen rich environment for you. What are you going to do? Well, you're going to take a piece of liver and pour hydrogen on it, which will create oxygen in the reaction with the enzymes and make an oxygen rich environment. Or there are these moths that are keeping you out of a room. So you have to mix chlorine and bleach and then blow it in through a fan. But there are other puzzles. I like those goofy high school ones because you are a high school student in that game. So it's almost like the world is like matching your level of competency. However, on the hardest difficulty level, there are two puzzles, one of which requires you to interpret a poem about disfiguring a face into a keypad combination. Where like first I gouged out your eyes, matches with 1 and 3 on the keypad like that. Which once you understand, that's what it's saying to you. And once you match it up with that method of input kind of works, but otherwise does not look at all like a combination. And then there's one that just provides you with a poem and a series of Shakespeare anthologies. And you have to be aware of the contents within them. and also the... the various numbers that are involved that are involved in them. So like one vengeful man spilled blood for two is a line in a couplet there, which you have to match with Hamlet, and two youths shed tears for three, which is like Romeo and Juliet, and it gets even more obscure from there.
And that one I will interrupt to say that was also on those lists that I found of like the hardest puzzles, that was on there. The Shakespeare puzzle.
Yep. So you have to turn that into a four letter combination, or sorry, a four number combination.
Oh yeah. My gosh.
Which I love the balls of, so let's call that the best, but I can't understand just where they're coming from, so let's call it the worst.
The best and the worst.
Yep. That's how I roll. Dennis,
no, that
how
would
about
be
you?
Oliver Twist, not Shakespeare.
no, that yeah, would actually for me, Oliver Twist. No, it'd be Tale of Two Cities.
Yes.
Sorry, don't mean to jump on your spot.
No, yeah, you got it. For me, the game it for a game that is incredibly good at making every encounter like a mini puzzle, the one boss where they overtly were trying to be a puzzle, they really shat the bed, which is Dark Souls, and the Bed of Chaos.
They shat the Bed of Chaos.
Yeah, they shat the Bed of Chaos. but just it to this day that one just confounds me. Which I think isn't there something where that was kind of half finished, or they ran out of time on that, or.
all of Lost Izalith, like Demon Ruins into Lost Izalith, is kind of unfinished content.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's just a shame because, again, every character that you encounter in that game is like a mini puzzle, and it works really well. And it's like the one time that they tried, it just didn't work out. So,
yeah. Well, usually puzzles have to have some kind of, pattern, which this one doesn't. It's not so much a puzzle, and it's more of just you have to do like a couple of these things and be lucky enough to
be lucky. Yeah. If you're going to do a puzzle, luck cannot factor into it unless you can reset really, really quick, which you could not in that game.
Yep.
And then for the best, I don't know when I turned into an Assassin's Creed apologist. the puzzles in those games where you used your eagle vision to find like the portals into like another, dimension or whatever, that just put these like random, crazy, seemingly meaningless sets of data up on the screen, were great. And when you found them, you were set for the next 45 minutes. You could just sit there and try to puzzle this out. but I always love that, I never had to go to like a FAQ or anything like that to solve it. So I always had just enough to get me there. But like I said, it was a good long while of thinking, and I would literally get out scrap paper and write things down. And the answer just always felt like you went, oh, that's stupid. No, that's not it. Well, oh my God. Like it just always seemed like the least plausible, and you're like, I'm totally overthinking it. There's no way they would hide it that way.
Yeah.
And that would turn out to be the way, which they just, that is the puzzles that I look back and just felt the most empowered and satisfied, like a badass when I actually figured it out.
Those are great. They also kind of play into the conspiracy theory nature of the story too, because they have like a historical basis, and like they play into one of the cooler parts of the Animus, which is kind of a lame story conceit altogether, I think. But the idea that mm-hmm. there's this previous patient who I forget who did the VO for him, but it's somebody I really like, who has gone through this and simultaneously went insane, died, and was absorbed into the system to try and break it. And this is his way of communicating to you. That's super cool.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Hmm. Yes.
So again, I don't know when I became an Assassin's Creed apologist.
I don't know if you're an apologist if you find this one cool thing about this game.
Yeah, also, pirates. Like, multiplayer.
Yeah, no, it's fine. Like you're talking about like two and Brotherhood. Like those are great. Yeah. Those are legitimately
the good,
good
days
games
that I just never graduated from. Lucky me.
Ben, cool. How about you?
So I think I've mentioned this one before, but I think the best puzzles in a non-puzzle game would go to Knights Old Republic, just because the variety of different puzzles that they have, since they have like Prisoner's Dilemma there and like Towers of Hanoi and all those like fun problems kind of inserted in there. I think another one, I don't know if like Deus Ex's hacking would be considered a puzzle or not, but I thought that was a really great mini game. I don't know if it's a puzzle.
Which Deus Ex are you talking about?
The Human Revolution.
Okay.
That might be more, might fall under more of a strategy game. I'm going to second the God of War sentiment of how a lot of times they'll stick puzzles where puzzles should not go. Mm-hmm. I'll also double down on Dragon Age Inquisition and say that, a lot of times they would have a puzzle there, but it was just completely out of place and like unwarranted. So if anything, it just broke up the game flow of the game. So, yeah.
Which sucks because you get the idea they were put there for pacing.
Mm-hmm.
Like to pad stuff out, not pad, but like to put a break between masha masha masha.
Yeah, and like the worst I guess you probably wouldn't consider this a puzzle, but where it'd be like, find these four parts of a sword hilt, and it's like, so puzzle is walking around the map and looting things. So
yep,
whoops. Yeah
it's just a fetch quest.
Yeah
Huh. Well, yeah, that is certainly a whole bunch of good and bad puzzles we just talked about.
And I would also say Shadow of the Colossus, but I'm pretty sure that's a puzzle game. So
I agree.
But if it wasn't, those are really good puzzles.
Yes, I also agree. Yeah. So thank you, everybody, for writing in. This was a good topic. So thank you, Jala. Yeah, if you are listening and you want to participate in these, go to facebook.com/thelevelpodcast in order to see these questions we post on Tuesday afternoons. And yeah, we are looking forward to hearing from you.
The grind.
Now it is time for the grind, where we talk about the games we have been playing over the past week or so. A period of time or so for some of us here on the show, Jala. Jala, since you were not here last time, I'm going to ask you to go first.
Hooray! Okay, well, I will go ahead and start out with my usual co-op mentions, all of which are Guild Wars 2 related this time. Mm-hmm. Graham, Justin, Sam, Conrad, and I beat the Ghost Eater Path and the Ascalonian Catacombs Explorable Mode Dungeon. And then Graham, Sam, Conrad, and I buddied up with James Robinson, who recently started playing, and ran Graham and James through their first jumping puzzle in the Skylab of Metrica Province, and it drove them nuts. Conrad then rewarded us by taking us to the Cerebro Room, which is an unfinished dungeon area that was abandoned but left in the level design. There's a bunch of these all throughout the game. And from there, I also escorted Dennis here through the Shark's Maw jumping puzzle along with Sam. And then we joined James and fought the Fire Elemental area boss. So... and then I also found one of the legendary llamas, thanks to Justin. So,
oh, hey, nice.
Yay, I got one of the llamas. I like, for listeners, I like llamas a lot. They make me happy. And so llamas are silly and funny, and there are llamas in this game, and there's only three of them, and you can get, like, an achievement for finding all of them. I found one of them. I've got to find the others.
How many are there?
Three.
Okay.
So, anyway.
In a big-ass game world.
Yeah, yeah, I was going to say, it's a fucking MMO.
Yeah. So anyway, other stuff I've been doing. I played some of King of Dragon Pass. I played one time through. I picked it up on iOS after the WoF episode dropped. And when I first got it, I intended to just pick it up, play a little bit, and then move on. But instead, I just like played through until the Groban clan finally died. Or it was like beginning to starve and I saw that the end was nigh, and then I just didn't have the heart to continue, and it depressed me so much that I did not go back and play again.
Oh yeah.
And like I just have not had the heart to go back and play it again, but it was fun for the time I was playing it anyway. Yeah. But I will eventually go back sometime.
Yeah, the second time around is like you're not going to make as many mistakes as you did.
Yeah.
Like, even if you choose a slightly different strategy, like, you're going to know what lines of inquiry are worth pursuing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. And then, too, some of the encounters will repeat, so you'll end up seeing some of the same stuff come up.
Yeah,
so.
But some of it's random.
Yeah.
So good. So. I mean, aside from that kind of depressing end, how did the kind of, like, mechanical storytelling kind of strike you?
Storytelling was fine. At some point or other, of course, then it's just like there's so many things going on and I don't think I have enough time to actually think about what I'm doing unless I close this game for a little bit and then come back to it. But because I was playing all in one giant chunk, I don't think I'm like, okay, I didn't stop in between there and consider, you know, I think I should. No, I just, you know, was going and going and going until it finally just went.
You're playing it on your phone or your tablet, right?
Yeah, tablet.
Yeah, if you're not playing this for a mildly popular retro video games podcast, I would encourage you not to hurry.
Well, no, it's just that I was enjoying the game, and I was like, well, I want to, oh, but this other thing popped up, and maybe I'll, but then this other thing happened, and then that's what.
Yeah, yeah. It does lead you on. It is like one more turn in a very satisfying, like, non-Diablo kind of way. It's more akin to, like, a Civ.
Yeah, well, it's definitely a fun game, and I will go back to it eventually. Mm-hmm. It's just I haven't had the heart in the last week and a half because I kind of fell into a black hole. Yeah. So, yeah.
Ben, I think you would really enjoy this game.
Why do you say that?
Just because of your fondness for Civilization.
Okay.
Yeah. I would encourage you to check it out. I believe it's available on Android.
Okay.
Yeah.
And let's see. Another thing I played... I played a little bit more, not very much of, but a little bit more of Dark Souls.
Hmm.
I finally replayed a little bit of it because of my long absence. And I went in and I fought against the Capra Demon a couple of times. And like I kept on getting stuck between the dogs and the Capra Demon trying to get past him. And I got him to like half health at one point, and then I'm like, you know what? Rather than letting this raise my blood pressure and make me want to turn this off and not go back to this game because mm-hmm. I otherwise like it, I am going to go do other stuff for a while and then come back in a little bit after I've, you know, done some other stuff for a little bit and, yeah. and played something. So I went into Darkroot and I fought the big stupid fluffy butterfly thing and, you know, wandered around a little bit and upgraded my equipment a little bit and, you know, like stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
I bought the crest so I can go into the forest. I have not wandered into the forest yet. I have not yet had the time, but yeah, I will probably wander into the forest a little bit and, you know, schmooze around there and then go back to play fight copper just because I don't want to like make that ruin my day.
You made a smart decision by going and exploring Darkroot because I firmly believe that is an area you're supposed to go first. Like the fact that they put an upgrade material right there and also give you the blacksmith along that path is kind of like, oh yes, this is going to harden you. Like wherever you stop on the critical path, you go over to this kind of optional place and pursue that. Did you find the bonfire next to the Artorias gate that you unlocked?
The Artorias gate? Oh, is that shiny magical gate in the middle of the forest is what that crest unlocks? Oh, okay. Uh-huh. I didn't know where it unlocked. I just bought it and turned off the game and that's where I stopped. Yeah, yeah. I have that bonfire. I need to kindle it, but it's there.
Yeah, kindle it. That is a worthwhile kind of shortcut to a pretty hard boss fight later on in the game. You can go to it now, but you don't need to before you go to New Londo Ruins.
I already wandered around down there. You know that. Oh, like I know.
But I mean, before you fight the boss. Yeah. Do you mind if I Sherpa you a little bit?
That's fine.
Okay. Capper demon strategy for that: take out the dogs as soon as you can, like right when they charge at you.
The problem is that I got caught on them and then, you know, the dogs, the like I'm hits, trying to roll past and get past them. And then they're just like, fuck your shit. And
no, you're not
I'm
supposed
like,
to get past them. You're supposed to let them come to you, take them out and then go up the stairs.
OK, well, then, you know, whenever I decide I'm going to go back that way, then I will just, you know, hack at them a little bit. But I also figured it wouldn't hurt to be like, you know, go wander around, level up my equipment, level up a little bit because I am not playing a heavy hitter. Mm-hmm. You know, so that way I can kill the dogs a little bit faster, maybe, you know, do a little bit more damage. That wouldn't be a bad thing. So it's fine.
Don't be afraid to rely on the Drake sword at that point either.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So this has been Bonfire Side Chat.
Level edition.
Well, I just wandered through and I also bought all the magic I could from that dude that I saved from Lowerberg that showed up at Firelink, and he seems very nice, which means he's probably going to die because everybody else is an asshat. So I'm expecting him to die at any minute because he sounds too nice.
Oh, Lowerberg, this is the guy who is the apprentice to Logan.
Yeah, that guy.
Yeah,
he seems too nice. He looks too generic. He's going to die. So anyway, all right. So the last thing I played was Cainsville Files, which is an iOS game. It's a visual novel made by Inkle, the people behind Sorcery and 80 Days. But it was released by Penguin Group, which partnered with them. So, like, if you look up Inkle, it's not going to be published under Inkle. It's under Penguin Group.
It's using the Inkle engine, right?
Yeah. And this is basically set up as an introduction to Kelly Armstrong's Cainsville series of books by published by Penguin. Mm-hmm. So the choices in the game at first really just kind of focus on order of information that you absorb and whether or not you gather additional data points. You know, like the options at the beginning part of the game are like, you walk into a room to investigate, see something, and a window pops up and asks you if you leave the room or look at the thing. And that's like arbitrary and stupid. Like, you came in to investigate the room. If you see something in the room, you're going to investigate it. Like, you don't need to pop up a window for that. You know, that's stupid, you know, but I kind of figured it was going to be like that because of, you know, the fact that it's a setup for a book series. But later on in the game, there actually are ways to die and ways to fail at what you're doing. And it gets the choices have more impact as you progress through the game. And the story itself is pretty interesting. And of course, it ends in a way that trails off, leaving you with a lot of unanswered questions, not about the main game's plot, but about the various elements and characters and stuff that you are introduced to. So that, of course, leads into the book series and everything. It's definitely worth a play. I don't generally read much fiction or in particular genre fiction. I tend a little bit more towards, you know, like nonfiction stuff or podcasts and things. But I may possibly pick up an audiobook version of the first book in the series just to see how it goes, because the game was fun. So,
Yep. Well, it served its purpose, it sounds like.
Yep. It's a murder mystery. Like, you play as a lady who used to be a cop. And she has quit the force and become a PI and is, you know, has some connections with the force. And then, you know, she ends up getting a case that relates to somebody that she used to know. And, you know, it goes on from there. And, you know, there's different layers of things happening, and it goes back through flashbacks, you know, of your life. And then, you know, things that happened back in the day, and then, you know, the present time. And it's pretty interesting.
Does it make good use of the visuals? Like, I know 80 days.
It actually has pretty nice visuals in it. So I would say definitely it does. They actually have nice graphics, which was surprising. I didn't really think they would, but it doesn't look out of place. Let's say it that way. Like, it looks on par with what you would find for a visual novel game on iOS. So,
yeah. Well, it's cool to see an author like embracing this interactive side of things, especially as like a primer for a series.
Yeah. And that's part of what caught my attention, was the fact that it is part of, you know, like an introduction to a series of, you know, like basically quasi, it looks like it's kind of quasi, you know, mystical, you know, murder mystery detective type stuff. Mm-hmm. And that's a genre that it's one of the genres that I'm all right with. Like, it doesn't seem overly like there's vampires and werewolves everywhere kind of thing. So I'm cool with it, because it's, you know, not so far into the occult part that it turns out being kind of like Anita Blake Vampire Hunter or anything. Yeah. So
nice. Well, yeah, I'll have to check this out. There's a bunch of Inkle stuff. I haven't paid too much attention to them since we did the game books episode Watch Out for Fireballs, but they released the third part of Sorcery, which I need to go in and dip into. Looking
I'm surprised
at their...
you haven't I have I'm surprised you haven't played that, Cole.
I know, right? I didn't know that it was out. Like, they didn't publicize it very well, or I just wasn't paying attention.
It pinged on your phone.
maybe. Huh.
Well, yeah, cool. This one was $2.99, I want to say, but yeah, it's worth it for that price. So yeah.
Nice. Anything else, Jala?
Nope, that's it.
Cool. Let's see here. Dennis or Ben, who wants to go?
I can go. Mine is quick and simple.
Cool.
So on a lark, I decided to try Twisted Metal, because I hadn't played a good car combat game in a good long while.
That's been a while. Yeah.
Which version of Twisted Metal? The 2013 one?
Yes, 2013 relaunch.
PS3. Yeah.
Yes, PS3, and it was something. Mm. I did not play like multiplayer, which I don't know if that was a mistake and if that's where the real zeitgeist of the game lies. The single player was functional. And it was fun for the amount that I played. I played all the way through the Sweet Tooth campaign.
So here's what we know. The game exists and it works.
Which is, you know,
that's more than you can say for some games, all right?
It's more than you can say for Big Rig Off-Road Adventure.
Yeah. But so, you know, I played the Sweet Tooth campaign, which is the first leg of the story campaign. And there are three legs to it. I don't think I'll go any further. The car combat is fun, and it was just kind of, you know, something I hadn't, a type of game I hadn't played in a while, and that was refreshing. But the entire theme of that game is just everything is trying so hard to get you to say that's so metal. And it almost gets goofy after a little bit.
How heavily are they leaning on Rob Zombie still?
The music is all Rob Zombesque, I would say. And certainly the theming and just the zeitgeist of the game is very much in line with that. You know, you're an insane serial killer trying to hunt down his only escaped victim, which happens to be his daughter, and is entering this road combat competition led by a demon with magical powers who will grant you any wish.
I'm sorry, that demon's name is Calypso.
Calypso, while still at the same time going on a killing spree, and just, you know, being a general horrible person. And the one interesting they did, and I'd be willing to bet that every story leg ends with this kind of ending. They did a real monkey's paw for him.
Oh yeah, that is a series standard.
Ah, okay, there we go. See, this is my first experience with this series, so. So that was the one little twist, although I saw it coming, but I appreciated that it wasn't just, you know, I appreciated that they didn't end with the scene of, a girl getting dismembered. So,
yeah. So what was his ironic ending? Because I doubt anybody is going to care if you spoil the ending of a minor plot in Twisted Metal.
I don't even care.
Wow. Man, that is ultimate license. Like, fucking run with this one, Dennis. Yeah.
So yeah, Sweet Tooth is a serial killer, and he's you find out first that he's trying to hunt down the one victim that's ever escaped, which you find out then is his daughter. And it was like, you know, when he went insane and started killing, he started with his family, but she got away. And so he's, you know, he'll do anything. He'll enter this road race. Or this, I don't even want to call it, this demolition derby of extreme proportions, to find his daughter. And so he finally wins the race and goes to Calypso and is like, take me to my daughter. And so he teleports him into a coffin that's 6 feet underground that he's stuck in. Hmm. And his daughter committed suicide like 10 years ago and he just didn't know it.
Well, I'm still sad.
Yeah. It could have been worse.
True.
And again, They tried. There was a twist. It wasn't just, you know, straight up. Yeah, then I found
Dennis.
You and killed her.
Yeah. Dennis, that's so metal.
That is.
that abuses the rules of, is it metal? Like, I think that is it metal has to apply to stuff that is joyfully metal.
Yeah.
You know, like so chrome skeletons thing, gallivanting on a sea of blood. Like,
I think the, you know, like, ridiculously weaponized cars is pretty joyfully metal. Mm-hmm. So like the gameplay is fine. It's the story stuff that they tried to mash in between the missions that's weird.
Well, and I was going to say
so the yeah. cutscenes are all FMV.
Oh,
which is awkward. And then every intro to a level, and it's all skippable, so I could have just mashed X and solved my own problem. But it's it is a series of like camera zooms through different areas of the level, and each zoom gets one line of dialogue. The only problem is that each zoom is like a full 5 seconds, and so you get "Welcome to New York City." Dot dot dot.
The
dot,
gates
dot, dot.
Are open.
The gates are open, dot, 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 for slaughter, dot, dot, dot.
Pick up your weapons.
Where? Come on. Yeah. let's get to the chase here. Let's get cut to the chase here. But yeah, so it was, you know, it scratched an itch that I had. It was interesting just as a curiosity. And it made me listen to a lot more metal than I would have otherwise.
I'm surprised that they even bother with a story mode. What's the point?
It's like a holdover, right?
Yeah, I think it's something you do. If you want to learn the game, you got to go somewhere. I take that back, because I started story mode and was just like, they'll start out with a tutorial, so I won't really look at controls. And then they didn't. There was no context. Yeah. And for anyone, maybe it feels natural to anyone who's familiar with Twisted Metal, but Twisted Metal has a weird-ass control scheme.
It does.
Square is the gas. Mm-hmm. Circle is the brake. X is the handbrake. The firing, I couldn't figure out for the life of me.
It was on your triggers, right?
It was on, yeah, it was on the triggers, but then the trigger triggers were like swap weapons, And then, but you could only swap if you had more than one type of weapon. And then the firing only worked some of the time because I didn't understand that I needed to swap to a weapon that I had. It was just awkward.
That
really, really awkward.
Scheme is so metal.
Oh, and you know what? This actually reminds me, I actually played a little bit of Rocket League too, but it wasn't anything to really mention. I don't know what the hell I'm doing in that game.
You should mention it as something that's better than Twisted Metal.
Well, it is better than Twisted Metal.
Does
anybody
else
I played
else
with
here?
Listeners.
Oh, that's
the
cool.
End. Yeah, like with Jonathan, Brian, Mikhail, and I don't know, probably some other people. I'm sorry if I forgot you.
Does anybody else here have history with the Twisted Metal franchise?
I think I played the third one, maybe the second one. Yeah.
Yeah.
And brief encounters.
I played a modest amount of Twisted Metal Black, like split screen back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So
which I could see being very, very fun. Mm-hmm. And again, I have very fond memories of like off-brand car combat games with my brothers. So that's what kind of brought me back to it. But
your Jax X and such.
Yep. Jack X, Crash Bandicoot, CTR. actually, the one really fun one was Muppet Racing.
Oh, you're just talking about carts, good kart racing games now.
I guess it is kart racers, but we play kart combat games as well. Yeah. And it was good times. So this reminded me of that. It was kind of laughably over the top, and scratch that itch.
At least you didn't pay money for it directly.
Yes.
You slid some money across the table and you were not responsible for what came back across that table.
That's right. Yeah. It's one of those things. I can't even really be mad about it. Just this is the kind of thing that I like about PlayStation Plus, which is I got an experience I never would have gotten otherwise. Like I never would have gone near the game. I, have an interesting story to tell. I can laugh at it, on its own terms and be done with it.
Hmm.
So $5 a month for those little delights, we'll call them. Why not?
Yeah.
Is fine.
Makes sense to me. Got anything else in the hopper?
Nah, that's literally it.
Cool.
Oh, I got the Lion's Arching.
What happened to Virtue's Last Reward?
Oh, Danganronpa?
I'm playing it. I will put in more time on this vacation.
Okay, cool.
And then after you're done with that, you're gonna
steadily. I figure the next time that's right for me to talk about it will be when I'm at the end of the game.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
I've done the starting, I've done the midpoint, and then we'll do a final closeout.
I think these lines of conversation are two ships passing in the night. I think she's also asking if you intend to finish Virtue/Reward.
Well, because you'd mentioned it before that you were going to go, you wanted to go back to it because of Danganronpa. So
yeah, I gotta finish Danganronpa before I go back to it though.
Yeah
yep. Well, the good thing is you already have one of those in your possession, so
yeah.
You have both of them, so like there's no
both,
hurry.
Yeah
but then you have to pick up Danganronpa too.
Yeah, I know. There's a lot of good games out there. It's a good time.
I know, right? Ben, how about you?
I'm still going through Metal Gear Solid 5, and I'm coming to realize that it's a long game.
Holy shit, yeah. how many hours do you have into it?
I don't know. I don't know if it tells you how many hours you've played in it or not. But, I mean, I know I've played it for over a month now, I think. Mm-hmm. So,
don't dilly dally.
No, I committed like a good day and a half to it over the weekend. Upon recommendation from one of the listeners, Stephen V, I can't pronounce his last name.
Villio, I think.
Stephen Villio. He recommended that I pick up Quiet and finish that mission from last week's conversation because she also can mark people on the battlefield.
Yep. You just have to ask her to, whereas D-Dog does it automatically.
Yeah. So I did that, and I had maxed out D-Dog's bond. So I started working with Quiet. I finished that mission, and upon your advice, I dropped supplies on her to get the stamina kill.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've gotten to the point of the game that was referenced earlier where there's some sort of meta puzzle looking at your people. So I've gotten to that point of the game.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much right where I am. I still think I'm a good maybe 10 missions away from the end of the game proper.
Just about, yeah. Like you, with that discovery, you have found out like what the main thrust of of that leg of the story is,
which is hilarious.
just you know, like find and replace nanomachines for X.
The Bond plot twist is hilarious in this game. Yeah. So I laughed aloud when it was revealed.
But like they go places with it that make it make a tremendous amount of sense.
Okay.
At least to me, like, and I'm willing to suffer a great amount of bullshit in order to like get to those cool things. So everybody take that with a grain of salt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, so far, I mean, so quiet, okay, but I think, yeah, the topic of conversation is, like, so I read articles about this, because she's obviously, like, very sexualized as a character, and, I read one article that was, I think Kojima defending it and saying that there's, like, a character reveal that explains why she dresses the way she does, so I will try and hold out judgment for that.
Well, even if there is a character reveal, it was, and there is. It was also his decision to make that character such that she was as revealing as it was. So like he phrased it as you're going to feel bad for being judgmental because of for judging me because of XYZ, her outfit and such.
And it's like, well, even if there's a reason, like, you created it in the first place.
Yeah. And like, I'm generally like pro quiet.
Yeah.
So, you know, like, if you want a booby lady, that's fine. Put the booby lady. Just don't sit there and make some kind of overtures about it. You put a booby lady, it's fine.
Yeah.
Leave quiet where she is.
The biggest problem is that she doesn't talk, and even that has narrative implications or narrative reasons behind it. But, like, man, you still had the ability to... it's all your choice. Like, you make up the rules for this world.
So my initial thought of the character was that it was making fun of like most women characters, and the fact that like they're overly sexualized, and this one literally says nothing the entire game. So I thought that was what the point of the character was, but I'm not exactly seeing that. But
she's also a hyper competent warrior woman who has very complicated motivations once you figure them out.
Yeah,
like there's plenty to like there, and you know it's one of those things that I like but cannot recommend.
I don't know.
Well, I had posted some fan art, I believe, of Quiet from one of the people that I follow on DeviantArt, and it was a really, really awesome thing. And then that like spawned this giant conversation about booby ladies. Mm-hmm. You know, like, damn it, booby lady, but she's so cool, but booby lady.
Yeah.
You know?
Bayonetta, like, I will also defend Bayonetta. Like, a character can be sexy without it being objectifying. Like, I believe that, but it's tough. It's really tough. And, like, I don't begrudge anybody their, you know, mixed feelings about that.
There's a level of awkwardness anytime it is a work of fiction, because like you said, at the end of the day, it's someone else choosing this for a character, and that's hard to just completely put out of your mind.
Well, it was actually a conversation that I'd had some point with some of the listeners about it, and I'm like, you know, I think a lot of the people in our community are probably more bothered by booby ladies than I am. Like, say, for example, with 999, I like Lotus's design. Mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, she's a booby lady, but she's also a belly dancy lady, and she has kids, and my sister's a belly dancy lady who is, you know, now going to have her second kid. So, like, you know, okay, that's fine. You know, that's basically kind of like my sister, who's a computer networker, and, you know, Lotus is a hacker. I can totally see my big sister here, like. That's a real person, so I'm fine with that. I'm fine with that booby lady. It's cool. Like, it doesn't bother me, but, you know, like, it really bothers other people that, you know, she's hanging out. It's like, well, people dress like that for whatever. It's sometimes it's cool. Sometimes it's a little much, but, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. If you like Quiet, great. If you don't like Quiet, great. I don't know. I haven't played the game yet, so I don't know.
Yeah. It's the only reason it gets uncomfortable for me in situations like this is because it explicitly is the creator's fetish material.
Yeah.
I'm using fetish in an incorrect way here, but like what they particularly find attractive, or here's a world that I have complete control over, you know, can I weird science like make a, you know, this this idealized version of a woman that I have complete control over? The creator of Bayonetta came out and said, yes, this is my fantasy woman, you know, who is like this sexy, ultra powerful librarian. And Kojima has returned to this torn stocking kind of look multiple times throughout the series. So it's obviously something, you know, so that's where it gets weirder for me, is that somebody is like making their own wet dream manifest.
Well, yeah, it's at the same time, it's like at this point you should kind of like anticipate that he's going to do that, because that's a thing that he does. And, you know, like everybody's got their quirks and their faults and their good points, and maybe his one of his faults or quirks or good points, depending upon who you are and your opinion of it. All of these kinds of things, and it's okay, whatever.
And it's also probably my own hangups. I don't like somebody trying to evoke boners from a video game.
Well, I mean, like, I rolled my eyes when I was playing Snake Eater, and I'm just like, really? Okay, whatever. You know?
It's like, okay, but I can also appreciate something that is meant to be aesthetically pleasing on some kind of level, and be like, okay, yeah, that is a cool stylistic decision, and that just kind of plays into the overall thing. I'm sorry we hijacked your topic.
Back to Ben in the actual game.
I mean, the thing I liked about Snake Eater is, even though they had similar things where it's like, you know, you press R1 to look at her chest or something like that, you know, like at least it was tied to the narrative of the story, where it's like, you know, because part of the story is Snake, you know, falling in love with that person. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It says something about Snake. It also says something about Kojima. Like, the camera is Kojima in these games.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, what's where it gets dicey with Metal Gear Solid 5 is that you don't really have a lot of control over the camera. You can do those zooms, but it is not like press R1 to see what your character is paying attention to. Mm-hmm. It is more like, here is the camera moving around, and you can zoom in.
What do you want to pay attention to? Yeah,
or what does the director want to pay attention to?
Yeah. See, like, once I play it, then I can have a real opinion on it. I was just kind of like throwing out a general statement about it.
Yeah. I don't want all booby ladies to disappear from video games, because I...
Oh, no, we need booby ladies. It's fine.
Yeah, it's...
I have no problem with that. Just give me some naked men sometimes, too.
Well...
That's what fighting games are for.
With Metal Gear Solid. With Metal Gear Solid, you have no shortage of man ass, so...
Oh, I know that. Like, I played Ground Zeroes, and I'm like, damn, check him out. Like,
that's their lead. Yeah. Doctor uniform.
Yeah, I mean, patient, they have to put a booby lady in there somewhere, because all you're looking at is man ass all the time. Yeah.
Which, like,
fairness, man.
Which again conflicts with my other opinion, which is sex positivity, which is like, you know what, like, let's have a bunch of man ass up here, like, awesome, great, just like make it equal opportunity asses abound, like,
asses for all,
Metal Gear equal opportunity asses.
Oh, cool. Yep. So you're not pretty close to the end, but you're most of the way through chapter one. I'm gonna be curious to hear what.
It sounds like I've made no progress with the phrase.
That's
like
what
that.
I was laughing.
But to be fair, chapter one is the game. Right?
Yeah,
the
it
game
is.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, yeah. Like, chapter one is it is a full game.
Yes.
So, there's still story. I think that if you're anything like me, you're going to want to see what comes into play for chapter two. All I'm going to say is, just go through the main.
You've already mentioned train wreck or something to that.
I didn't say maybe I said train wreck. It is a mess. It really is. And it is mostly filler, but like the stuff that's not filler is good.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that meatloaf ain't all sawdust. Okay.
Okay.
All right.
You say meatloaf, and I think about the singer Meatloaf.
Yeah.
Which just kind of brings it back to, like, the so metal, you know, bat out of hell kind of.
I love that he's this operatic singer who just appropriates all of this metal imagery.
Yeah.
Oh, you got anything else, Ben?
That is all I've been playing.
Gotcha. So I have basically nothing to give you a preview of what I've got in the hopper, like stuff that I've played, but I don't really have enough to say about, just yet. I've been playing through Undertale, and that is, so far tremendous. I enjoy it a lot. It is a JRPG style game, except most of the defensive combat is done through these bullet hell-esque dodge, these projectile kind of things. But most of the battles can be won by talking. So it very much is. I'm glad Dave is not here because he would go off on this. But it very much is either violence or the good option. But I don't have anything really more to say about it, so I will defer that until a later date.
Lots of people are talking about that game, and the sad thing is that I'm like, I know I should play it now. I'm probably not going to play it until like way after everybody else is done being excited about it.
Yeah,
well, you're not by design. Just that's just how stuff pans out, you know.
You're going to go through a couple of cycles of, oh my gosh, this is the best, and people, I hate this because people like it, and oh, I like this because people hate me because I like it. Like, you're going to go through a couple of cycles of that. It is a popular indie game, and I'm pretty sure things will normalize by the end of the year when you have, like, you know, time off to play this. So
yeah, and that'll probably be when I play it, when everybody's like calming down.
Yeah, it seems neat. I like the aesthetic, I like the writing, it's all pretty cool. The other game, which I have even less to say about, is Danganronpa Another Story. Oh gosh, what's the subtitle? Ultra Despair Girls. Okay. Which is a game set in the Danganronpa universe that is a Resident Evil style third person shooter.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sounds cool.
You shoot truth bullets?
You have one of the characters gives you a modified megaphone that this Institute for Hope has built to amplify truth words into sublingual programming to short circuit Monokuma robots.
Man, okay. They went all out to get to that one.
Yep.
Like, you need the bus and the train.
It's not just a walk. Yeah, no, I mean, it's anime as hell, but I love it. Like, nice. I'm all in on Danganronpa. Like, I don't care how goofy it gets. Like, the more the better. Yeah. But the real thing that I have to talk about, and I've only gotten like less than 24 hours to play with it, so apologies if this is a little bit premature, is I got my Steam controller.
Ooh,
nice.
Yeah, so this didn't arrive. Apparently they printed out the labels earlier than they shipped them, so my dates were all off. I ended up sitting out in the rain for most of the weekend as I was away in Portland, but I got back and I started messing with it, and I'm not really sure where to start with this thing because it really seems to depend on the game. Basically what they've done is developed the hardware and then handed all of the, like, hey, make this controller stuff work stuff to the community, down to the point where when you first load up a game that is not intended to be played with a gamepad, it says, hey, you should probably configure this. And there are community, like, top rated options to do this thing. It's fucking huge is how it feels. It's probably like 1.3 times the size of the PS4 controller. Maybe just a smidge bigger than the Xbox One controller.
That's what I was going to joke about. It's like, oh, still a tenth of the size of the Xbox One controller.
Well, no, are you talking about the original Xbox? Or are you talking about the Xbox? Yeah,
the man hands.
Yeah, no, the oh gosh, what do people call that? The chief. Now I can't remember what the colloquial name was for it.
Or how about that big space saucer of a Dreamcast controller they had when they packaged that with Knights?
That was you're talking about the Saturn. I need to compare that. Yeah, no, that was mostly empty space. Like, that was a big disc-shaped hunk of empty plastic that actually served its...
What's that, Saturn? Okay, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that was. Okay.
I own that thing. I need to go compare those sizes. This definitely feels more substantial, and there are a lot of niceties to it. However, like, I haven't, just in my cursory examination of games that I've installed for it, I have encountered something that feels like the Steam, you know, it was specifically, you know, accommodating of the Steam controller design. However, like, one of the games that's coming up here for Watch Out for Fireballs is Thief Deadly Shadows, and I don't want to play that at my desk because I'm not an animal. So I want to play that in my recliner. However, you basically have to... nobody's created a scheme for that, so I have to go in and, like, cross-check and double-check and basically design the controls on the fly to make it work. And this configurability is something that works greatly in its favor and also greatly to its detriment. which I can see as this thing reaches the, you know, reaches the full market. Like, I'm still in the early release category or whatever, as people, you know, for kind of older or obscure games, start putting in their community things, giving you a starting point to like mess around with it. That customization being a really good thing. However, it does feel like I'm doing an awful lot more work to make these games playable, in the format that I want to.
Yeah.
So, but like the biggest thing about them, is the touchpad kind of stuff. And I was skeptical about it, but also kind of excited. Like, I was like, huh, this seems like a weird problem that they're trying to solve. I can't imagine, you know, the meetings that led to the design this thing ultimately got, because it could either be really dumb or really effective.
Mm-hmm.
I'm leaning towards really effective, because the force feedback kind of makes this thing work. Kind of by default, if you're doing any cursor management or movement on the right or left pad, the haptic feedback in it really kind of sells the illusion of it being a trackball. A lot of the earlier reviews of this thing that I read said, oh my gosh, it feels exactly like a trackball. Like, it keeps on moving when you lift your finger off of it, and it stops when you press it back down. Like, it's really impressive, like, how they managed to create that illusion. It doesn't feel just like a trackball. It feels like a pad that rumbles in a strategic way to give you feedback about what kind of, like, you know, computation is being done about cursor position behind it.
Hmm.
Yeah. However, it seems to work just fine. It really does feel like something you have to get used to is the biggest thing. And I've only had 24 hours into it. So I loaded up Dark Souls and I was like, you know, there's no real aiming that you have to do in this, but you can use this as your kind of camera control, right? And you can switch between, like, is this a joystick? Is this a mouse? Is this a trackpad? Is this a scroll wheel? And all of those are very subtle differences for when I move my thumb across this pad, what does this thing ultimately do? And none of them really seem to feel just right. The closest was the trackball, actually, because it really just kind of, like, read that, like, mouse cursor movements. Anything that says, like, hey, treat this thing like a joypad, you know, treat this right stick like a joypad, felt either, like, way too sensitive and finicky or not sensitive and finicky enough to where I had to swipe several times to do, like, a full rotation, which, you know, if you're on a console or if you're on a controller with a regular right stick, you just kind of hold left until you see what you need to do. I'm thinking about it more, and I'm not sure if that is a result of the controller and the operating system shortcomings. I'm not sure if that's a result of I just need to go in and play with it more and mess with the settings, or I'm not sure if I just need to get used to it and it's not going to feel like a problem.
That's a good question, sure. But you did prompt me by talking about Dark Souls to make me remember that, you know, like, usually I'm control dumb and I don't remember controls at all. I don't retain information about that at all in my brain. Mm-hmm. But, like, when I went back to Dark Souls, I actually didn't have any problem whatsoever picking it back up again and playing and getting back into it. Mm-hmm. Although it was interesting because I was playing it differently.
Yeah.
The end. Continue talking about your controller.
No. And so like learning control schemes, this is weird, right? Because you're either getting what somebody else thought was the best way to control this game, and everybody mm-hmm. else voting and saying, like, hey, yeah, this is pretty good. Or you're getting the, in a few very rare cases now with this thing being out less than 5 days as of the time we're recording this, what the actual developer thinks is the best way to do it. But, like, in some instances where I'm, like, designing a Thief 3 control scheme, like, you're going in there and I'm kind of, you know, on one hand, I have a leg up because I'm making it. So I know that, like, I want my crouch to be not the left, like, pressing the movement stick, but actually the lever button behind the controller, like, not the triggers, but the one that your pinky and your ring finger rest on. Like, I want to mm-hmm. press that to crouch, right?
Huh.
Like, that's something that's just right there. It's not mirrored to anything. You can, like, you have total customizability behind it. And so I'll remember that because I know that, you know, I put it there because that's what felt best to me,
mm-hmm.
you know? So, like, there's all those kind of things, but ultimately this is a thing with, you know, 16 different physical inputs on the top of it, not counting, like, the various directions and, like, analog inputs around the the stick or the pads, you know, so it could end up being very complicated behind that.
Yeah, see, for me, because I am so control dumb, that could either be a good thing or a terrible, terrible thing. You know, like, that could be like a lot more trouble than I think it's worth for me personally, because I've already been playing a good chunk of these games on either a keyboard mouse or, you know, on my gamepad that I already have, you know. But at the same time, if I could make them a little bit more intuitive, then perhaps that would make it easier for me to remember the controls. Yeah. That's the number one thing on my wish list, but it's probably not something I'm going to be picking up right away. So.
I would definitely wait. I mean, I don't know if you have a choice right now, but like wait until the broad release in November for like a lot of stuff. Like it could be the case that as I'm speaking about this, somebody is making a thief control scheme. Yeah. You know, around this, I could probably make a name for myself if I just put my name on a bunch of, you know, these old games and their best at the moment controller configurations.
That's an interesting thought. Someone then goes professional control scheme maker.
Mm-hmm. I mean, maybe like they give you like there's like dead zone control. There's like secondary dead zone control. There's what happens when you're all the way at the edge of the analog input. Like it gets super, super granular in a very admirable way. I just wish there was a way to make kind of like broad changes. Also, not every game plays nice with Steam big picture mode or the Steam overlay. Mm-hmm. So I have to quit out of Thief every time I want to make a change to the way the controller works.
Yeah, that's rough whenever that happens.
Yeah, so it just happens to be unfortunate that that's the game I need to have beaten within a month that I have to do all that. But I'm also forcing it on myself by not playing with a mouse and keyboard like most people would.
Like a normal person.
Yeah. Any other questions about the Steam controller? Because that is all I got.
No, sounds cool.
Awesome. Do you all want to button it up?
Buttons!
The credit. Now it is time for us to call it quits for the night. This has been episode number 125, 125 of The Level. Thank you so much for listening. We really appreciate it. If you came out to speak to me and Nick and Gary and Brayton at the Portland Retro Games Expo, I really appreciate it. If you were not able to and you have the means, I really recommend going to it next year, because we definitely intend to go. In terms of admin, you know, the regular stuff. There's a new one that I've been hitting across all of the shows here, which is there is a wonderful iPhone podcast app called Overcast, which recently changed the way they recommend shows to people. And they've pinned it to how many people recommend episodes of a certain show. For a while, Watch Out for Fireballs was up there on the list. It is not now, but I've seen it pop on and back off. It's really just down to how many people go in and star certain episodes. So if you want other people to find this show, obviously you can do the iTunes ratings and reviews. We haven't got one of those for a while, so we'd love to see that. But also, this is a way to go through and just do a couple of swipes and help us climb them ladders.
Yay!
Yeah. I think that might be about it. Is there anything I'm forgetting, everybody?
Sounds right to me.
Cool. So I have been Cole Ross at Cole Ross on Twitter.
I have been Dennis Furia at D Furia on Twitter.
I am always Jolichon. The end.
And sometimes Merkelizer on Twitter.
And until next time, or at least a second from now, listen around for the title. All right. Does anybody have one they want to submit?
I have a bunch.
Okay.
Fanny pack that fights you. Tuzzles. Okay. Shat the Bed of Chaos.
Okay.
That's a good one.
Rob Zombesque. And I know this is not going to make it, but Equal Opportunity Asses.
Yeah, I've got a couple.
That was fine.
Yep, I've got a couple of those. I've got a bunch of those in there, actually.
I also had What's a Tuzzle? With a question mark.
Okay. Ben?
I had a couple, but I did not write them down. Oh, I did not have the foresight.
All right. Well, now you've learned.
Took me 125 episodes to figure it out.
All right, so I've got Baby's First Danganronpa, Meet Tuzzles, They Shat the Bed of Chaos, Rob Zombesque, Joyfully Metal, Equal Opportunity Asses, That Meatloaf Ain't All Sawdust, and I took down yours, The Fanny Pack That Fights You. But that actually was not in the that was not in the main episode, so we have to disqualify. I'm sorry. I just realized.
Oh.
Yeah.
I like What's a Tuzzle.
Yeah. Puzzles are funny. Teletons did not make it to a title. We should tuzzle it.
Ben, how do you feel?
I like Shat the Bed of Chaos.
Yeah, that's also pretty funny. So.
I don't know. So I think that Shat and Asses might be problematic.
Yeah, that's why I figured those weren't going to be in there.
But it's fun to have in here as a list, and I'm going to drop these on the Slack people and make them guess.
They like that game.
Yeah.